What I was going to talk about today is the fact that one way of looking at it, one famous teaching line I always like from in Zen is one calls and one answers. And it's the fact that the Buddha's calling Buddha, a famous Zen koan was, the god of fire is calling for fire. And a lot of Buddhist training is actually opening us, the very fact that you're listening to this talk, whether here at the Priory or on Zoom, means that you felt something calling you, something is making you look deeper, that makes you want to, that's resonating in your heart, and in a way that doesn't fully, you don't fully understand. The part of your brain understands it, but part of your brain doesn't understand really what it is that it is. Just like if I had to define what's calling me, what is it? But on the other hand, I remember just hearing the Buddhist teaching and feeling like there's something true there. There's something that resonates in our heart that we're responding to. And there's something in all of us that has a desire not to be selfish, but to be free and pure, to be in tap with something much more than just, wow, I want this, or how can I have that? And in a way, due to karma, our real heart's sort of covered by a selfish heart, a heart that's self-absorbed, a heart that's thinking mostly a lot about me. The image I always like giving is that we had a computer printout of our daily thoughts, we probably would find it rather depressing to read. You know, kind of like, okay, this is really what I've been thinking about all the time. God, can I really not? But something's actually calling to us to respond to something deeper. And training is actually getting in touch with that. And the more we cultivate that there's a deeper, that there's something deeper that we're trying to respond to, the more we can actually start following that call. Just like in the monastery, they try to say, and in a temple, that the bell that you hear is Buddha calling Buddha, that there's something calling you. And in a way, you have to look at it, that something calls us, but most of the time we don't seem to be listening. You know, we're just kind of caught up in our lives and don't even notice. In fact, the world's full of people who feel like nothing is calling them. In fact, in a way, the world's full of people who, on one sense, and in a lot of ways, feel like life is meaningless. And they're battling against a sense of meaninglessness. Like, how do I give my life meaning? What can I do? And sometimes, you know, it's like an image I remember when I was young, hitchhiking cross country, and I meet this fellow his life was surfing, but he found it hard to do 12 months a year. So he was trying to he decided he has to start skiing. So, you know, he can. And training is actually both, we meditate and we sit still so we can get in touch that something deeper is calling for us to respond. You know, that we should be doing more, you know, that this training is responding to a deeper call in our heart than just, wow, how do I do my job better? How do I become more successful? How do I get this to work, that to work? And, you know, then that's something that has us practicing. Yet there's always a gap in the sense that a good part of the time we ignore the call, we don't respond to the call, we don't recognize the call, and there's that gap. And in a way, in Soto Zen, they go that we all have a koan, a spiritual question, spiritual problem we're responding to. In Dogen, we're not given a koan to meditate on. Our life is a koan. And in a way, our life is, how are we not responding to that call, and how do we bring it together? Just like the story I was like with the God of Fire is, you know, which I've often used, is someone was in a was with a famous master, and, you know, he had trained at various places, and he never kind of asked the master anything, not an unusual thing. And so the master finally asked this monk, "Why don't you ever ask me anything?" He said, "Well, I think I understand." So the master kind of goes, "Well, what's your understanding of Buddhism?" And the monk goes, "The God of Fire is calling for fire." And the master just looked at him and said, "If you think that's understanding Buddhism, you haven't even begun on the way." And the fellow thinks, "I understood Buddha." He walks out of the monastery and, you know, he leaves. And he thinks after a while, "Well, you know, this master really seemed to know a lot, was a great master. Maybe I should go back." And he did really what, in a significant way, Sangha. He recognized he could be wrong, and maybe he shouldn't be so proud and think he understood everything. And he comes in and he goes up to the master, "Give me teaching on what is on Buddhism. What should I understand?" And the master said, "You know, it's just the God of Fire is calling for fire." And the fellow had a spiritual awakening, you know, experience. Because it's not like, and that's the truth. The matter is, you can hear, the words can be quite true, but did you really hear it in your heart? Is it going to change your perception of the world any more than I can say, just like on Wednesday night, somebody was talking about, for her, for some reason, it resonates very much with her. The whole world is one bright pearl. And she said, "Okay." I said, "Well, it's only real if you live in it, you know, so you're perceiving the whole world as one bright pearl. Just to say it isn't the meaningful thing. To say, 'Well, I think that seems to be the truth,' is how do you answer the call and make it the truth? So you can say everything is Buddha or whatever you want to say, but the training is you answer the call by trying to live that way, not saying, 'Well, I'll live it when I experience it. I know it to be true.' So it's like you hear the truths of Buddhism and say, 'I know this should be true. I should let go of this. I should do that. I should be more compassionate, kinder, and all the rest.' But we answer the call by saying, 'Although I haven't, how do I live that and bring my fire and realize it's the Buddha's fire, you know, the God of Fire calling for fire?'" And delusion, in a way, can always be seen as thinking nothing is calling us. There's nothing really going on. There's nothing deeper that we can experience, that it's all, you know, just like if I tell a lot of people a lot of the teaching, it's like, okay, this sounds nice, but, you know, what's there to believe in? Just like if I counsel somebody, sometimes asks me, "Well, this person's dying and they don't believe in," and I kind of go, "There's no easy, I can't, it's not like you can go to their bedside and make them realize something is calling them. They had a practice that maybe there's karma that'll allow them. Maybe they made some good karma, so now they can hear it, but there's no way you can make someone hear it any more than I can make you hear what's calling you right now. So when you walk out of here, how do you hear it?" But the arising of the self, in a way, is what stops us from closing the gap between the call and the response. Because we suddenly go, "But I really don't want to let go of this, have this," or and it comes up in very meaningful ways. You know, I don't want to put up with this feeling. This is going to hurt. This is going to be you know, just like a good example is somebody, a very frequent thing people will say to me is I'll talk to them about something, but they say, this is really difficult. Whatever it is, you know, it's like, wow, it's really hard to let go of this or do this or put up with that. And I kind of go, yeah. Actually, if you want to close the gap between the call and the response, it's difficult because there's good karmic reasons why we don't want to respond. You know, it's not, if it was easy to, we all would have done. I can remember, you know, it's just like when I was when I first got involved in Buddhism, there'd be popular things like Est, where you could just do an intense weekend to transform yourself. And of course, people after a while realize it doesn't transform, you know, nothing gets transformed in a weekend. You know, may have something positive happen, but, you know, no one really gets transformed in a weekend. And it's not that meaningful. So we're responsible to look at what is it that's causing us not to respond, where the disharmony, where the self arises, what we think, what we're making important, and how do we actually make our spiritual life important. And you can't just say, I'm going to make it important. You have to look at what's getting in the way and cultivate making it important, which is Buddhist practice. You know, you offer incense, you bow, you do these things. You show up at the temple, you listen to the talk. All these ways are ways we're trying to make our spiritual life important, which in a way is answering that call so we can hear the call. Just like you'll walk out of here and you're more likely to feel like, okay, how do I do this than if you hadn't heard the talk, hopefully. On the other hand, how do you keep that going? And how do you make it keep coming alive in your life, which is hard. At times it's not alive. At times it's like, you can look and go, well, I'm not making progress, rather than just going, something's called trusting, something's calling you right now. You know, it's not like there's something special at, nothing special happened when the monk came back to the monastery and asked the master. It's just he was willing suddenly to let go of something. And actually, there's things to let go of all day long. Why am I making this important? How do I just be willing to put up with this difficult person or this difficult situation, or realize it's okay if that some things fall up, you know, that I'm going to have trouble. Just like I was talking to someone who is having difficulty due to the corona, you know, the pandemic, and it's causing financial problems. And I go, you'll just have to go into debt. The person goes, no, I don't want to go into debt. And I go, this is actually the proper use of credit cards. Isn't to be in debt when you don't have anything going wrong, but when things go wrong, that's when you should just realize it's okay to go into debt. You don't really have an alternative, and you have to accept the karma, you know, that this is what it means. And luckily, at least if you have credit, you can go into debt, you know, you can, or go into your retirement fund or do whatever it is that you need to do to get through it, and realize it'll just be whatever it'll be. Just like people have lived, you know, I've talked to people who are all depressed because they don't have enough to retire on. And frequently they did fine. They just had to find another way to get around it. Just like someone I know, you know, ended up finding this good subsidized housing. So they're fine. You know, they just, you know, you wouldn't have known you could do that, but they did it. And you just don't know. But we're responsible to see what's cutting ourselves off from finding peace, which is answering the call, because all the things that are making us not peaceful are things in our lives that are calling us away from the Buddha. And instead of trusting that it's good to be here, trusting what's going on. And we're responsible to look at our disharmony and try to return them to the purity, to see, okay, what's making us make a problem out of this? Because in a way, our sufferings asking for peace, our desires are asking us to free ourselves from them because they're binding us. Our heart just wants to be pure. All our hearts want to be pure. Nobody likes looking at themselves up and saying, wow, I'm being selfish. I'm being insensitive. I'm being just making myself important. And when we feel disappointed, despair, doubt, in a way it's telling us that we're not looking to answer the call, but we're doubting the call. And we're making what's going on much more important than it is. It has its importance, but it's not the... It's just telling us, okay, this is what I need to deal with. Instead of a problem, this is a teaching. Somebody tells me how much something hurts. I can say, I don't want that teaching, but this is the teaching you're being given, that this hurts, and how do I deal with it? Just like something, you lose somebody you love, and this is a teaching for you. It isn't something going wrong, it just hurts. And how you deal with it means either you can use it or you can feel like you're being bound by it. So when we experience fear, confusion, suffering, they're just calling us to see what we need to let go of, to see what it is that's going on, and how do we still recognize Buddha's calling Buddha? How do we do that? So we answer the call by trying to see everything with forgiveness, with trust. There's a meaning to what we're doing. In a way, we're missing the call. Buddha. We're not going to hear the Buddha calling Buddha when we don't recognize that there's something meaningful going on right now. You know, whatever you're doing, something meaningful's going on. Buddha's actually calling you. You know, and something in your heart wants to respond and not have this as meaningless, not as something that I either have to get rid of or get through or do something. This is my life. This is the life of Buddha. How do I live it? Often I can see people filling themselves with meaningless activities as just the fact that they're ignoring that there's something deeper going on, a deeper call. It's not like we all are active. The meaninglessness is just that we're not seeing the spiritual meaning in them. You know, there's nothing right or wrong about the activity. Somebody could be, just like I remember walking with someone who was a monk who I thought probably is going to stop being a monk soon. And we're walking along the bay and he's just looking at people doing windsurfing and he's just getting caught up in how much fun that would be to windsurf. And I thought, if it was so much fun, everyone would be windsurfing. It sounds like a nice thing to do, but really doesn't matter that you windsurf or not. And I kind of thought, and when he was getting caught up in it, I thought to myself, it's not going to stay a monk if he keeps thinking how wonderful this or that is. And he did, you know, I kind of knew that's what he was heading out to, because he lost faith in a way, the call that he, in a way, either that the call's there, or I think, or just his ability to answer the call. You know, because we get the accumulated karma and the feeling of our half-hearted efforts or our lack of effort. And you can feel, well, that's who I am. I'm not someone who can do this. This is real for people. Just like I remember when I was in college, one of my roommates, I was already very interested in Buddhism. So one of my roommates, I remember this woman kind of telling me, oh, I just love to read Zen books. It just makes me feel really good just to read Zen books. And I go, do you want to do anything? She says, oh, no, I never could do anything. It just makes me feel good to know that's true, you know, that that's there. But it's not like I could ever do that. And of course she could, you know, there was nothing about it that she couldn't do. You know, we all have different needs, different, the way each of us hears the call is different. It's not like there's one thing. Sometimes it's a teaching. The teaching calls us, the example of somebody else calls us. I mean, I knew people who became monks just because Reverend Master Jiyu says, they just thought, this person knows, you know, has something that I can trust and follow. And they said they didn't even know for a while, it didn't even matter to them if they were a Buddhist or not. You know, just like I remember, to my amazement, hearing Leonard Cohen, who lived at the singer-songwriter, and he actually lived at a Buddhist monastery for a number of years, but he said he never even felt like he was a Buddhist. It's probably one of the reasons he didn't stay. It would have helped for him to take the teaching, but he just, something in there obviously called him. In fact, I always like with the interview with him where he lived at a, you know, in this Buddhist monastery, Mount Baldy, and for a number of years. And I remember Terry Gross on Fresh Air saying, well, it's, how did it feel like to have all this privacy and solid? She said, he said, there wasn't any privacy. You were always with people. In fact, part of the training was learning not to, just to put up with everyone, because you're always in the mid, you know, you're on a schedule, because it would have been similar to those who have been, you know, almost all of you have been to Shasta Abbey, and you're basically on a similar schedule, you know, where your day's just full of activities and most of them done in a group. So you're not like in this private world, but, and in a way in the monastery, because you don't have a choice, whether you like it or not, you have to respond to the schedule, which helps you to respond to the call of the Buddha. But most of us don't have that structure, so we have to put some structure in. And the structure doesn't do your training, or there wouldn't be, or Leonard Cohen would have stayed in the monastery rather than do something that I don't feel is probably the spiritually, you know, just performing, you know, touring as a musician, I have a feeling isn't the most meditative life to have, because it's fairly demanding. But the, what we need to do for each of us, it would be nice. People often want a formula what training is, which people, particularly when they're new, they almost frequently want to ask me, well, what should I be doing? Like, how much should I meditate? How much should I do this? Or what should I do? And I usually don't give very clear answers other than you want to set up a regular meditation practice and you want to do stuff, because in a way, what answering the call is for each of us is different. What works for each of us, what's calling for each, what'll cultivate that call is different for each of us. I mean, I know people who have been coming here who actually kind of, the teaching may not resonate with them that much. Something else is bringing them here, or something else is calling, you know, is resonating with them. And something else helps them, you know, somebody, some other way of practicing, reading the scriptures helps, or bowing helps, or being with the Sangha helps some people way more than other people. Who, you know, how much we should meditate, how much we should do things isn't kind of fixed. You have to take responsibility and just see what is it that you need to do. How do you respond to the karma? To see what is doubting and realize a lot of training is converting that doubt, converting what is it that feels, that's putting your limits on what you can do. Because we all actually, we bind ourselves. This is who we are. rather than realizing there's something boundless. And that's the one calls and the one answers. There is something boundless in us. And if we act upon that, we can let go of the limits when they come up and make real spiritual progress. While if we just decide, no, this is, like people will sometimes, you know, almost like, this is all I'm willing to offer. And sometimes due to karma, you have to just accept it. It's like, I remember someone was serious about their practice, but they kind of, for instance, should I go and get this extra degree? I don't really need it, but, and it'll probably take me away from my practice some because, you know, working full time and getting a doctorate was what they wanted to do. And they didn't really need the doctorate. It wasn't like they wanted the doctorate. At least that's my understanding. And I kind of go, it's okay to get a doc. You know, it's not like there's a right or a wrong because you can't make the call. You can't make the fire in the person. But on the other hand, you have to cultivate switching metaphors, what fire there is. You have to see what feeds it, because in a way, that's another way of seeing the call. What will feed your desire to train, to seek something more than just getting by or having a good life, which can easily turn into a bad life. Again, talking to someone who's in a lot of physical pain, saying, I think I've had about all I want of this life. And actually, maybe reasonable, you know, if it comes up to let go of it. It's not like you have to do everything you can to keep a body going. But on the other hand, it's good to realize this is still, Buddha is still calling Buddha, even in this painful, old, falling apart body, to do that. And a lot of training comes from trusting that we're all suffering from deep ignorance in how we make things important, which comes out of ignorance. Just like if you want to see how ignorance works, just think of how your mind worked when you were young and what was important. Usually you can see now delusion quite clearly there. Because for instance, in our culture, usually when you're young, you spend most of your time mostly being concerned about what your peers think of you. And usually as we've grown older, we've become a lot less to care about what peers think of us. No longer have to be trying to be the cool, you know, like as I was as a teenager, how do I be cool? How do I be somebody everyone thinks of? I can even remember when I was young, working so hard at trying to be cool that I even fooled people because I wasn't that cool. I remember getting together with women who thought, you're really not that cool. You know, you're a lot less cool than you are appearing to be. Because, you know, I probably worked hard without even thinking about it. I want to be cool. I want people to think I'm together. But if we look at ignorance, the thing that allows us to hear the call is the unreality of often the things that we're giving importance to appears. Just like now I can look and see the unreality of the fact that I cared so much what other people thought of me. It doesn't mean there's still that karma there that what do people think of me? You know, just like I can smile, you know. It's like I get caught up in praise and blame and all the rest.